sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We're going to get to Neil Riddell in a few moments. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. So you have other wrestling questions?
Well, my question was regarding, you had said last half hour.
We're out of time. All right, so.
You said last half hour, the big reason why the wrestling program doesn't go to the Bryce Jordan Center is because they have to pay to use the facility, but they don't have to pay to use Rec Hall. What about the basketball program? Does the basketball program have to pay to use the facility?
Every single day.
Really?
They practice, they have to pay rent. They play the game, they have to pay rent. Their offices, they pay rent on a monthly basis. So the basketball program is constantly paying rent to Housing and Food Services to use the building. So every time they practice there, rent. Every time they play a game, rent. Every day they show up in the office, rent.
What about football? Do they have the same issue with Beaver Stadium?
No, football is its own entity. Housing and Food Services runs the Jordan Center. Athletics runs Beaver Stadium, Pagula, Rec Hall, so forth. The one building that Athletics does not have control over is the Jordan Center.
Is that because they have other events there besides basketball?
In the end, they felt it was the best way to go because it was supposed to be a multi-purpose building.
Okay, I think I follow you.
The multi-purpose building, because they book all the events in there and so forth. And so they're the ones that have to coordinate everything. But Housing and Food Services runs the Jordan Center. Athletics has no control over the building at all.
Now,
they're a prime tenant, but still.
Now, does the wrestling program, I know they do one. Do they have more than one at the Bryce Jordan Center this year?
Only one.
Okay.
And they sold it out.
Okay, now, would it be a moneymaker for Penn State to be able to do that with the biggest matches of the year if it's more than one?
Sure. I mean, they could do it with the biggest matches of the year. I mean, if you were to put Iowa in there, it would be a tough ticket. It would be a great ticket. You'd do very, very well. I mean, I know they sold it out, but that's not, you know, the drop count in the building actually was 11,000. So they actually missed by, you know, they were going through, this is the largest crowd, blah, 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 blah. Nah, well, okay, ticket-wise, yeah. I mean, But
you get 11,000.
The drop count was 11,500 in the building, which meant there were 4,000 empty seats.
Still, you get 11,500 in that building for a wrestling match, and that is going to be one loud wrestling match.
Sure
it's
going to
be one great facility. And can you imagine bringing a recruit in for that as if you would have to find any other reason to say come to Penn State?
But Iowa wrestles at Carver Hawkeye. Same kind of building. That's where they wrestle all the time, and they get 13,000 in there all the time. So,
but I think that's what a lot of wrestling fans don't quite get is, well, okay, one match is there. That's great, and if you're not making money, then why not have more matches there? I get the answer to that would be, you sell out that many matches at Bryce Jordan?
Look, there's a bottom line in today's athletics, right? Penn State Wrestling does a tremendous job of minimizing the amount of money lost in the sport. Okay? They do a tremendous job. I mean, the tickets are priced just right. Okay? They're not too high. They're reasonable. Families can go. The pricing is tremendous in a facility. And by the way, the other part, too, is parking's free. Okay? The Jordan Center parking is not free. You have to pay $10 to park. So you go to a Penn State wrestling match, your ticket price is in single digits, and your parking's free. What a great, great setup to see an awesome, awesome program wrestle. Okay? You go to the Jordan Center, well, now you got to pay rent. Now you got to pay to park. And it's not quite as easy street as people think it is. It's not. You're still not going to make money. Now you have overhead. See my point?
I do.
You have to price things at a certain level to do it.
I still think Big Ten Network should be doing more on their web and on their app.
On their web and their app, they should. On the network, look, they've done a lot of research. On the network side, they've done a lot of research as to what works and what doesn't work. How about that?
And my argument as a fan would be, okay, well, why not have
part of your communications department do that in each school and feed it to Big Ten Network to put on your app or on your online feed.
Remember, there's still production costs involved. You have to remember that. There are still production costs involved. You still have to hire. You still have to set up cameras, set up the truck, or mini.
So that can't all be
the mini pack. Well, they can do student run, but it still has to. The equipment still costs some money.
You still have
set
to have
an
engineer and that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay. You still have to have a director, engineer, the whole thing. There's a lot of things you have to do to make this work. You know, the mini pack still costs money.
And Penn State has this facility. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a really nice broadcast facility.
It actually makes life for the Big Ten Network exponentially easier because they can hook in through that. All right. So,
thank you for taking time to answer my questions and I'm sure some other wrestling fan questions as well.
And we bring in Neil Riddell from the Altoona Mirror. Neil, welcome. Great to have you back, my friend.
Steve, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Appreciate you asking. How do you think this? You look at this. What's your perspective on how everything has played out to this point? I mean, with obviously a lot of games to be played in the future.
Well, I mean, number one, I was disappointed Bill O'Brien left. I was kind of hoping he would stay at least one more year. I thought that would have further solidified his work. I'm not naive. I figured he was going to go to the NFL at some point, but I thought, hey, 3 years versus two would be better. Put Hackenberg in a situation in that class going into their junior year, really take them through. But he took them to 2 years through the most troubled waters, and I was impressed with James Franklin. I mean, the pool candidates they had, the fact that he was in demand and interviewed at a number of real high profile places, and I thought he did an excellent job at the press conference, and that's been, you know, the only exposure so far other than hearing bits and pieces on some national. He certainly seems to be very confident and very enthusiastic.
And then the next part, too, is obviously the players have had their chance now to get a chance to meet. They had a 25-minute meeting with him on Sunday, and now they're entering into the winter program, which is going to be critical for them, and it sounds like that part is straightening itself out. How do you look at it from the players' perspective and what they've been able to say so far?
Well, I mean, and this is kind of a theme. These guys are obviously resilient. I only laugh because who would have expected kids to be as taxed as they've been through their careers, and you know, just to be able to roll with a coaching change, and realize that's kind of part of life. And you know, I know it's kind of new to all of us at Penn State, but these guys have set the tone for the program for the last 3 or 4 years, really. When you look at the class that they handled and the leadership that they showed through the scandal, and now, you know, through their third head coach, not even counting interims.
Does this hire have a chance to start the settling of Penn State football?
I think it depends. You know, and I remember it was you that said to Bill O'Brien that this was a 10 to 15 year type job, and he seemed to agree, shortly after he had gotten there. So,
right,
you know, I think that probably depends on James Franklin and his long-term vision and his success. He seems like he wants to be a college guy, and I'm sure that everybody hopes for stability at this point after being so spoiled in that regard for so many years. I think that he really has a chance. You know, the work that Bill O'Brien has done in taking them through the toughest part, I think, should make it a little bit easier for James Franklin.
Do you feel now with relatively full complement of scholarships they can give out now and an absolute full complement they can give out next year and raising to 75-80, is it your sense that the corner is being turned and that there's a foundation that he inherits that's pretty good?
I'm not sure I would go quite that far yet. And maybe I would want to see, you know, ask me, you know, after the Ohio State game this year. Because I think that's always going to be a measuring stick. I would like to think that Penn State is always going to be striving and compared to how they do against Ohio State and Michigan, and really now Michigan State.
Right.
And when you look at that division, it's suddenly a little leaning in the heavy, you know, in the Eastern. You know, Michigan State, the way they have played, has played itself into the conversation. They deserve that kind of respect. So, you know, I don't know that you could say turn the corner yet, because, you know, to me, turning the corner for Penn State football would be consistently 10-2 right. or better, you know, or maybe in next year's case, a little less than that. So I don't know that I'm quite ready to say that just yet.
Yeah, that's why I use the word starting to turn the corner, because I mean it'll be a process. It's going to take a while because the sanctions were designed to do that. You watch that second unit linebacking group last year, you said to yourself, yep, sanctions, that's where it got them. You could see certain things where the sanctions did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, and if you watch the BCS games, the speed of the game,
right.
even the teams that weren't necessarily in the final, the speed of the defenses, that it just seemed to be a little bit of a higher level, and I think that'll be part of the challenge as they continue their growth.
What were your thoughts on Larry Johnson?
Well, you know, I understand it. I mean, you know, how many times can you kind of be passed over, whether it's for a coordinator or a head coaching position? I think he gave them great service
yep.
for 18 years
mm-hmm.
and really would be on a very short list of the best assistant coaches that they've ever had. When you combine recruiting ability and player development and NFL success, you know, I think he's I don't want to say in a class by himself, because I mean there's been a great history of running backs. I mean, when you talk about, you know, Fran Ganner and the contributions that Tom Bradley made and just over the years, Larry Johnson, I think would be in that class of what he gave to Penn State. You know, had he stayed, and you could look at that veteran guy on the staff, the one holdover, you know, that could have been a nice niche. I think as a lot of the Penn State fans would have liked to seen that, but I think they understand it, and, you know, I don't begrudge him, even though he is going to, you know, what it's funny, Steve, we always talk about, well, they don't have a big rival. They don't have the number one rival. Where's Pitt? That's the one. Well, I think that the rivalry with Penn State and Ohio State did get a little more stoked this week.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, Larry carried on really what is a great tradition at that position, because I think people forget J.T. White was a heck of a defensive line coach. Jim Williams did a great job with the defensive line as well. They also produced a lot of NFL guys,
mm-hmm.
too. So sometimes you get jaded by recent history and get locked in without looking at the total body of work over decades of other people that did really good work at the same spot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether, you know, it'd be probably a separate show or at least a separate segment to, you know, when you look at the defensive line that Larry Johnson has turned out versus J.T. White. Of course, you had Mike Reed and Bruce Clark. You'd probably start there. That'd be pretty good.
Yep. Yeah, not bad. And then they had this Mill and Clark thing. They seem to be okay. So, I mean, look, they've had a great history, and he did a great job of carrying that on and enhancing it in his own way. How about that? All right. I think he certainly did that.
Yeah. Now, he would get credit for Courtney Brown, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He would. Oh, yeah.
I probably would give Larry Johnson the edge on the players that have come out and gone in the NFL, because, you know, we all think of Reed and Smear. Well, Smear wasn't necessarily a great pro. He had most of his career in the Canadian League.
Right.
So how long was J.T. White an assistant?
Into the 70s.
Yeah.
Into the 70s. So, like Mike Hartenstein and guys like that. I mean, he did pretty well in that spot.
Yeah.
For years and years. But, you know, it's a fun thing to talk about because it's a great lineage. college football today and the expectations. How do you view expectations now in college football and how it's covered and how it plays out? What's your viewpoint on that, and how much has it changed over the last even 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, I mean, it's probably totally out of hand.
Probably.
I mean, now you look at breaking news. This just in, so-and-so's going to become a coordinator at somewhere.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
So,
that stops the crawl. And it's not just head coaches moving now. It's assistant coaches. And I'm not talking about Larry Johnson. I mean, that seems like it's been that way the last few days all over the country. I think you can't have it both ways. You know, we look at the number of the passionate. Penn State is fortunate in the amount of passionate media. Who was it that once said that an empty press box is a bigger problem than 50 people or 200 people in there questioning your every call?
Right.
When you look at the travel, the number of outlets that still travel, even in tougher times, I think Penn State, Ohio State, Jerry Emick said to me when we walked in there for that game, he says, I can't believe the number of people that Penn State sends, because they thought they took a lot of people. So I still think it's you can't overcover it. We've tried to take that attitude, and I think a lot of places, papers and of course, websites have taken that attitude.
When you sit down, Neil, to do a perspective piece, obviously you're trying to draw upon your experience, but how much time do you like to step back for a moment, contemplate it, and then put it on a keyboard?
Well, more than 140 characters.
which is,
I appreciate being able to sit back and maybe wait, part of the day, or have something start writing possibly in the evening, and then smoothing it out the next day and having it run maybe a day and a half after you started it. I mean, I wrote a column on Bill O'Brien's departure. I started it, I think, on Saturday, because it's really smelled, it's to the point where, I didn't want to have to have a gun in my back.
Right.
And of course, we're all on New Year's Eve. I'm thinking, it's 3:00, it's 4:00. Houston's dismissed their PR staff. They're not going to confirm anything to anybody. Let people have their New Year's, and then on Thursday, if it's going to happen, maybe it would happen. But I didn't want to feel like I had to write something like that right on deadline. So I started working on it, say, Saturday, Sunday, and it ended up running probably not till, I guess, Thursday, because we had an early paper on, of course, Corey, we were all over the web on Tuesday night, so it didn't run in the paper till Thursday.
Right. And that's,
we had an early paper, early run on New Year's Eve.
Right. And that's one of the difficulties at times with this show that people don't realize. Something happens, you react to it, and then you say to yourself later, okay, wait, I really wish I had a chance just to let it breathe and just think my way through it and then come up actually with a better perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a place, for that. I know everybody's in a rush, and it's unfortunate, and we've talked about it here all the time. I said, hey, people are not going to remember who were second. They're going to remember who was wrong with premature reporting of somebody. And I think, we have a lot of professionals on the Penn State football beat. There's no doubt. I mean, a lot of them are good friends too. And I think everybody, when you look back, a lot of people have different strengths that, in their approach to coverage. I feel fortunate to still be part of it.
And I think you're spot on. I think you're absolutely right. There are a lot of great professionals that cover this beat. I mean, great professionals. And they all have something in common. They would rather be second and right than first and wrong. And that's always been I've always respected how the press has covered, I don't care, broadcast, written doesn't really matter, that how they've gone about their business. A lot of respect for them.
It was fascinating to watch when, say, when you're the school that you cover and their coach starts a dance and looks like it's going to heat up, and it immediately moves and shifts over to the Schefters and the Rappaports and the Mortensons of the world, because they have those kind of ties for a wink and a nod that they could be sure about. They could say that here's a second or a third source has told them yes.
Yeah, and usually, well, and to be frank with you, it's usually agents.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's, you know, and that's that's the difference between covering something like that and covering what you guys and I have to cover on an everyday basis. They have that access to people who want to quietly pull them aside and say, my client.
To a degree, it's not fair, but life's not fair. I mean, roll the tape back, Steve, when Jerry Dunn was pushing for a contract extension. Who was he telling? Was he telling me or Mark Brennan? No, he was telling Andy Katz.
Yeah.
So, okay, fine. Is Andy Katz, is he going to come to your games? No.
No.
But that's just the way the system, unfortunately, works.
Yeah. But if you want to get good stuff on a daily basis, you check your local guys out. Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Neil Riddell, Altoona Mirror. Sorry, Kev, there was no wrestling discussion there.
It's all right. I got my fill. I'm good. It was a nice discussion last half hour, and if you missed it, you can go online with Jeff Byerly and go to stevejonesshow.com and listen to the first hour podcast.
Mike Farrell, next half hour. We'll get him for a few minutes to talk about what it was like for him in the transition from one coaching staff to another. We'll talk to the former Nittany Lion as we head to the bottom of the hour. Now, do you want to head to the bottom of the hour here all the way through, or do you want to take a break?
Let's take a break, and then we'll head to the bottom of the hour.
Let's take a break here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at SunburyMotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us in the Sunbury Motors Studio today. Sunbury Motors, they've been with us since day one as we head into our third year of the show. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin and I had a frank discussion on wrestling in the Big Ten Network. They should put more on. There's no question about it. The problem with the sport is that it doesn't quite have the broad-based appeal in terms of getting casual fans and getting ratings. That's, you know, as rabid as the Penn State wrestling fan is in Pennsylvania, as rabid as the Iowa wrestling fan is across that state, you know, it's not that way in Indiana. It's not that way in Michigan. It's not that way in Wisconsin. It doesn't have, even within the Big Ten footprint, the kind of broad-based appeal that I think some people assume it does.
And I do like the idea of being able to put more on their app and more on the website.
Right.
And
sure.
You know, a good example of that is Saturday. Saturday's news conference with the introduction of Coach Franklin was actually not done on BTN Network. It was done on the app and on the website.
Mm-hmm. So, the basketball game run over?
The basketball game did run over, but I don't think they ever intended on putting it on the network, because what they were scrolling on the bottom of the screen of the network was that it was going to be on the app and on the web.
Well, they ended up putting it on the network, so they actually ended up doing that.
Oh, because I know the start of it definitely wasn't, because they kept, like I said, they kept scrolling it on the bottom.
Yeah, because the game wasn't over yet, if I recall correctly.
Well, I know that when I was looking, it was about 2 or 3 minutes before 4:15, and they still had about another minute and a half to play in the game.
Well, it's usually 10 minutes. All right. So,
right, exactly.
In real time. Let's bring in former Nittany Lion offensive tackle Mike Farrell, who's gone through transitions in his playing career. Mike, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Doing well, Steve. How are you guys?
Hey, it's great to hear from you, Mike. It was good to see you also a few weeks ago as well. Talk about the transition that players have to make from one coach to another and what runs through a player's mind at this particular time, because you lived it.
Well, there's certainly, I think, a list of both pros and cons. On the bright side, you know that a new coach coming in is really going to reevaluate things from the ground up. So if you're a player that you feel has been underutilized, or you feel like maybe there's other guys on the team that maybe have gained a reputation or stereotype by the current coaching staff, a new staff is really a fresh start for all those people. It really notches up the competition and everybody trying to make a good first impression when those coaches get there. So I think, it can improve the productivity of a team and their enthusiasm. At the same time, you're worried about things you don't know, if there's going to be changes that might be drastic to a point that, you may not be comfortable with. If it's a coach that, maybe he's never been a head coach before, in Coach O'Brien's case, that was something that you don't know what their approach is going to be, because, they're in a new position for the first time themselves. So there's a lot of different pros and cons that I think a player has to deal with, but one of the positives to look at is that it is always an exciting experience, because change can be exciting, and it really brings out the competition and the best in people, I think.
Mike, what was tougher, learning the playbook or learning the terminology?
I would say those, both of those things are intertwined in a lot of ways. They go hand in hand. So if I had to choose one, I would say the playbook and just the philosophy. To use from my experience with Penn State my senior year, Coach O'Brien, it was just a different philosophy of up-tempo, no huddle, varying tempos, having more than one no huddle speed. The fact that, we wanted to score and score fast, 30 points, 20 or 30 points was not enough. We wanted to score, or at least approach each drive like we were going to score a touchdown. So, just changing your mindset is something that a coach really needs to lead the charge on and do a good job with. And, that approach, along with teaching a playbook and teaching the terminology, you really get to see what kind of teacher a coach is. A lot of coaches say, well, I need 3 years to teach my system to this team. Well, sometimes, at the highest level of football, you're not going to get 3 years if it takes you that long. So you really do get to see, what kind of teacher your coach is and how he gets his points across and installs an offense or a defense.
You were used to what Penn State wanted to do offensively. Thus, I'm sure in the offseason, while something here and there was put in that was new, a little bit different, how much more time did you put in yourself personally to learn this, because it was all new?
I assume you mean for my last year with the coach.
Yeah, for your senior season with Bill.
All right,
Bill and Mac, obviously Mac McWhorter,
right,
as well. So,
it was definitely a whole new application of yourself going from year to year when you're younger. And if you're all in the same system from year to year, there's always learning until a certain point where you feel like you have a comfortable handle on everything. At that point, if it takes you 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, whatever that point is, from there on out, you know, you kind of maybe stop learning because you don't have to refresh yourself as much. You don't have to approach things that are new in the off season. To have all that dumped on you, you know, to learn for your last year, or just, you know, regardless of what year, you know, year a player was in, just to learn for that upcoming season, it definitely took a new commitment, I think, to get a handle on, and I think that will help the guys up there right now. You know, they're used to, they've already gone through that experience where they had to pick things up quickly for someone else, and then with the arrival of Coach Franklin, they'll be asked to do it again, and you know, I think that experience will only help them.
If you had to give the players on the current team just a slice of advice from your living it, what would you tell them?
Well, to start out, I would, I am in touch with a lot of, or at least, quite a handful of guys who are still there, especially some of the offensive linemen, and I am excited for them. I know that Coach Franklin is one of the guys that they were kind of hoping might get the job and are certainly excited now. But, you know, that all along, that was my biggest concern is, you know, obviously I was tuned into the coaching search and whatnot, mm-hmm. but just knowing that those guys are happy, you know, those are the guys that they're going to go out on Saturdays and play, you know, that's who the biggest concern for everybody should be, I think. And the fact that, you know, they're excited and happy about it is something that I'm glad to see. But my advice to them would just be to remain positive and, you know, attack it like they have this whole time. I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, what years before them have done with the coaching change or what, you know, the senior class was able to do the first year with Bill. I just think that, you know, they really have experienced it once and just to trust in that process and do it again. I think that the leadership's in the right place as far as the players they have on the team and the coaching staff that they're assembling now. And, you know, I have full confidence in them. It's, to me, it's as stable a situation as I, you know, can really remember in recent days up there. So I'm excited about it for them, and I think they're going to do a great job.
Mike, when you look back on 2012, which was your senior season, which obviously no one could have ever expected to have had a senior season like that with all the twists and turns, in the end, what do you take out of that where you feel the senior class has a place in Penn State football history? What do you what did you take out of all that that even individually is going to make you better in life?
Well, I have been thinking about that topic, you know, more and more recently, and how, you know, all my teammates at that point from that team, the senior class members and myself, I really think only, you know, got better and learned a lot from that situation. You know, it's difficult because it's something you would never wish on, you know, your friends or someone close to you to have to go through, you know, kind of a lot of unfairness and a lot of just a roller coaster ride of uncertainty and unstableness. But, you know, I consider myself fortunate that things turn out the way they did. And I think we really did learn a lot. And, you know, you can't, I don't think many people would dispute that.
I don't think anyone would dispute it. I think Bill inherited a really great group that Joe and his staff had recruited. And I think that a lot of success that James Franklin's going to have down the road will be because you and your senior class kept it together here. I mean, look, I mean, at a moment where you hope things would be that someone would step in and save it, you guys saved it.
Yeah, it's definitely you know, something that we'll never forget. And it's a year-by-year thing now. I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that, you know, you have to step up when your number's called. As the senior class that year, it was our responsibility to keep the team together, and we only lost one senior from our group to the transfer rule, and you know, we felt that we just did everything in our power to do our part. You know, it was one whirlwind of a quick year, and then it was over. You know, it was hard to let go a little bit after that because, you know, we felt so much was on our shoulders, and you know, then when the season rolled around to its end, you know, that was it. But what I've learned since then is this past year, the next group of guys who became seniors really, you know, it's not really following our lead. It's just kind of the mentality of the whole team. You know, it was their time, you know, their opportunity to step up to the plate, and I think they did a great job. And I think that's why I'm so confident in this next year. Now that there's, you know, a new stability, hopefully, with Coach Franklin as the head coach, that's why I'm so confident that this next group of guys, you know, as seniors for the 2014 season, and then all the guys younger than them following their lead, will do a great job with this transition and then with carrying the torch.
Mike, as always, you know, for me, an absolute pleasure. Tell your family I said hi, and thanks so much for the time. We wish you nothing but the best, as you know.
All right, well, I certainly appreciate it. I'll do that, and thank you guys for having me on the show.
Mike Farrell, former Nittany Lion offensive tackle, talking about what it's like from a player's perspective to go through a transition from one staff to another. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz, 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, welcome back. Great to have you with us as we roll to the end of the show today. Ah, yes. You okay there?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How about you? You good?
Does it really matter?
Not really.
All right.
It's kind of a rhetorical question, to be honest. You know.
And
we did get a question from Tony on Facebook. Actually, it was kind of a comment. And it's kind of what you were talking about yesterday on the show. You know, he said Larry was offered the job, declined it. That's the way it's supposed to be done. It works for everyone. I wish LJ luck, but he's going to OSU, so I can't do that. No. I'm sure Penn State will get a very good replacement, though.
But you know what? Somebody brought this up to me earlier, and they go, how are you going to beat this unbeatable combination of Urban and Larry together recruiting? You know what? Am I the only one that sees this? I mean, I look at history and trends very much. Urban has done a great job in his career of inheriting programs and doing awesome things with the talent. He had the Jacobs kid at Bowling Green. They did awesome. They won the MAC. All right. Terrific. But he didn't recruit Jacobs. Goes to Utah. Gets an undefeated season. They beat Pitt in the Fiesta Bowl. Went undefeated. Alex Smith was his quarterback. He didn't recruit Alex Smith. Then he goes to Florida. This is where the body of work comes in. His second year, like the second year at BG and at Utah, he has a great year. But at Florida, a great year with their talent means a national championship. Chris Leak was his quarterback. He didn't recruit Chris Leak. Now, Tim Tebow did play as a freshman. And then, of course, they won with Tebow in Tebow's junior year. All right? But when was the moment where every facet of the program, coaching, players, especially the player part, where it was all Urban Meyer's baby stem to stern? Year 5 and year 6. What were the two worst years Urban Meyer's had as a college coach? Year 5 and year 6, when the whole baby was his. And when you have a depth of talent in Florida where you can just take a protractor down and you're like, okay, boom, 50 miles. Good. We can get 25 guys out of that 50 miles, don't you think? If I'm wrong about this, 5 years from now, call the show. There'll be good news. That means we're still in the air doing the show. Okay.
I was just going to say that. You beat me to it. I'm like, I'm hoping I'll be able to answer the phone then.
I think we will. But look at what history tells you. When was the one moment in his career where the whole baby was his? We don't get reads on programs like that anymore. seems like people, I mean, we know what a Les Miles program looks like at LSU, don't we? We absolutely do. We know what a Nick Saban program looks like, whether it was Michigan State. He had a partial at LSU. Now, I mean, he's got a full ride going at Alabama now. That's all. That's his whole baby now.
And the old ball coach has done pretty well in South Carolina.
Yeah, and but we saw what he had at Florida, though. That's my point. Where you see at some point where the whole thing is their deal, all the ups and downs that you deal with. His two worst years are years 5 and 6 at Florida, when it was all his recruits, all his coaches, all everything. Now, if he's listening, he's insulted by this. I'm saying, hey, tell me I'm wrong. I mean, the other years you inherited somebody else's talent, made it work. He's done. He is a great coach. There is no getting around it. He is a great coach. But there's been too much panic factor around him. And too much fear by people. Oh, look what he's doing. He's doing what?
But I do understand the comment, though, of Larry. No, hear me out. Of Larry Johnson making that switch because of his recruiting ability alone. Nothing else, but his ability to recruit and how well he's done.
Hey, this is not 1975 anymore, okay? You can't recruit 50 to 60 guys and sign them. You get your 20 to 25. Penn State gets its 20 to 25. Michigan gets its 20 to 25. Michigan State gets its 20 to 25. Maryland gets its 20 to 25. All right? You can't go out and sign. People act like, I gotta get 60 guys. They're not going to get 60 guys. You can't get 60 guys. Hey, you do with 20 to 25 that fits how you want to play the game, and you make it work.
The other day, you were talking about Western Pennsylvania. I would think that would be a great spot for Larry Johnson to be recruiting for Ohio State.
Look, he never has recruited in Western Pennsylvania.
I didn't know if he did or not, but I was just thinking of places to recruit.
He never has recruited in Western Pennsylvania. His area was the Harrisburg. That part, and then he did a lot of recruiting in Maryland. Okay, do you think every player that has come in here was signed by one guy?
No, I don't believe that.
Okay.
And I understand Maryland. He had a lot of connections there, and still does, I'm sure.
Of course he does. That's fine. Okay, he'll do just fine. I wish him nothing but the best there. But, geez, let's not panic here, for goodness sakes.
Well, I wish him the best, but not too good. How's that?
No, I wish him the best. I don't care. Penn State will compete against anybody. Penn State still has a little bit of a road to hoe here because of the scholarships. I mean, anything James Franklin does, he's still capped at 75 scholarships for the upcoming season. He's still 10 below everybody else. Then next year it'll be 80. So you got to remember, there's still that cap of 75 that Penn State has this year. Better, but still depth deficient.